Hello, Degrassi fans, and welcome to another episode of the Degrassi Kid Podcast. Guys, this has been so much fun. Like, I could make an entire podcast just about how fun it is to have a podcast. There have been so many people who have reached out and said they absolutely love listening, and that feels amazing. I've heard from real-life friends who may have only seen a few episodes of Degrassi, but they love to listen to me passionately talk about my favorite thing. That is so nice. Fellow Degrassi fans who just love the show and love talking about it, and even crazier, actual people from Degrassi. My dream come true. Annie Clark loves the pod, and after every episode, she tells me exactly what she did love about it, and that's amazing. Ian Christensen, who has officially announced he's coming back as Degrassi's publicist, told me my voice is full of enthusiasm and wonder. What, are you joking? From Ian, that is a huge compliment. And Stefan Brogren, our lovable principal snake executive director, liked a tweet about my podcast. Now, I don't know if he actually listened to it. I have no idea. But like, if you know me, that's all it takes. I'm telling everyone he's obsessed with it. I'm putting Stefan Brogren's favorite podcaster in my bio right now. And that is like, I wish I could say this has all been a dream come true, but I didn't know I could wish for this. I didn't know this was waiting for me in the stars. I had no idea. And I am so appreciative of every person who's taken the time to listen. Thank you so much to all of you. Now, before I deep dive into Degrassi, there is one more person I have to say a big thank you to for taking the time to listen to my podcast. I have to say a big thank you to Annie Clark's mom. Can you believe that? Annie Clark's mom listened to my podcast. That is a whole other level in itself. Can you imagine, first of all, that your favorite celebrity knows who you are? I can hardly process that even on my best days. And then I find out that her mom likes my podcast. That's incredible. So thank you so much to Mama Clark for being a fan. And also for not being creeped out that I'm obsessed with her child. That's honestly the biggest relief right there. So what I'm saying is, if you've heard my podcast and loved it, please tell me, because I love validation. The only thing I like more than Degrassi and Annie Clark is attention and compliments. And speaking of Degrassi's Annie Clark, we officially have set a date to do our podcast together. So the next time you guys tune into the Degrassi Kid podcast, I'm going to be here with a real Degrassi Kid. And honestly, I can't even think about it because it makes my tummy hurt. Like, I am just so nervous about it. We're going to talk about how we became friends, talk about Degrassi, talk about Annie's favorite things about me. Like, it'll probably just naturally come up, I think. And if you have a question you've been dying to ask Degrassi's Annie Clark, you can subscribe to my Patreon page. And guys, I know what it's like to be a fan whenever your favorite actor is doing an interview. And it's so annoying because you want to ask a question, but you're competing with like hundreds of other people to get noticed. And you're just watching the interview like, is my question going to get asked? Are they going to say my name? Like, I get it. As long as it's not crazy. Because like, listen, I'm a fangirl. I know we can get cuckoo bananas sometimes. Let's be honest. If you want to be part of my little secret club with Annie, you can subscribe to my Patreon account for as little as $3 a month, and the link is in the description. As well, I had some real-life friends and family reach out to me, and they were like, Jocelyn, love ya, Patreon's not for me. And I totally get it. If you want to support me and my dreams by making just a one-time donation, you can use the email in the description to send a one-time e-transfer. And guys, whether you send me a dollar or simply like and share the podcast, I appreciate you so much. Anything you can do to support truly makes a huge impact. So thank you so much. Finally, enough about me. Let's talk about my second favorite topic. Let's talk about Degrassi. Last week, we did a deep dive into the biggest moment in Degrassi's history. And little did I know that abortion would become such a big topic all over again. I had no idea. I posted that episode, and then 2 or 3 days later, the news came out about Roe v. Wade. And I truly just couldn't believe it. So for this week, I want to do something just really light and really fun and easy. Something that would actually make it on the summer schedule of Teen Nick in America. I thought, what if I tell you guys about real life moments that made their way into Degrassi? Whether it's a small inside joke or entire storylines being created, I want to tell you some fun behind the scenes stories that you might not know about. So let's get into it. Let's talk about real moments that inspired Degrassi on the Degrassi Kid Podcast. Let's kick off with a story that actually spans multiple generations. You might remember there's an episode in Degrassi the Next Generation when Craig steals a car and takes his friends for a joyride. Well, the plot of this episode was directly inspired by a real life event in the 80s. Pat Mastriani, who's one of my favorite actors from the show, played Joey Jeremiah on Degrassi, and he actually took the company van for a joyride. Pat said he was sitting around on set one day and was bragging to the other Degrassi kids that he was learning how to drive. So, of course, all all of these teenagers started egging him on, like, oh yeah, you think you're so cool, dude? You think you're so cool? Why don't you show us? So he did. He hopped into the front seat of the van, turned the key, and started driving. Now, Pat admits he only got a few feet before one of the producers ran out and started yelling at him to stop, which is, I think that is so funny to imagine. But this real life moment sparked a Degrassi Junior High episode called Trust Me. Pat said, literally weeks later, I'm reading an episode where Joey steals Snake's parents' car and goes out for a joyride. And I was like, this is interesting. Where'd you get this idea? And it's very common for Degrassi to take ideas from the real lives or suggestions of their actors. So they did an episode in the 80s about Joey stealing a car. Then in The Next Generation, Joey's all grown up now and he has a stepson named Craig. And Joey owns a used car lot. So Craig gets his hand on a vehicle and takes his friends out for a joyride this time. And of course he gets caught, he gets in trouble, but it's so ironic that now it's Joey running out of the building and yelling at him 15 years later. Speaking of Craig, there's a moment in season 2 when Craig goes on a date with Manny Santos. Now, if you listened last week, you know Craig ends up cheating on his girlfriend, he gets Manny pregnant, she has an abortion, it becomes this really big thing. But before all of this happened, it just started out as a little school crush. And when Craig is telling his friends about their date, he tells them that Manny just seems so immature. She just reminds me of my 5-year-old little sister, he says. And I mean, weird that he thinks this and then goes on to get her pregnant, but it's actually just an inside joke. Craig's little sister, Angie, is played by Alexa Steele, and Manny is played by Cassie Steele. So they're actually sisters in real life. So this little comment that Manny reminds him of his little sister is because she actually is Manny's little sister. Isn't that so cute? It's also very easy to miss that they're related if you're watching the show, because if they had any scenes together, you would have immediately been like, hey, they look exactly alike. But they don't. They don't appear in any scenes together. Alexa might also look familiar because she comes back 10 years later to play an entirely different character. She comes back as new Degrassi student Tori Santamaria. And a lot of questions come up about this. Like, why? Why did she play two different characters? Why didn't she just come back as Angie? Well, when they were casting, Tori was already a fully developed character with her own storylines, her own background, her own personality, and Alexa just happened to audition for the role, and they thought, well, she was perfect. She was a great fit for it. So it wasn't like Alexa was signed up for the show, and then they were like, okay, we'll just create someone brand new for you. She auditioned for a fully created character named Tori. So, well, why couldn't they just, like, take Tori and just name her Angie? Well, a lot comes with that. If you have a returning character, all of their history comes with them. Angie also comes with her older brother Craig, her dad Joey, his ex-girlfriend Caitlin, and all the baggage she had growing up. Her mom is dead. Her brother's famous. There's so much that comes with bringing back Angie. And in my perspective, if they brought back Angie, but let's say, for example, the actor Jake Epstein, who plays Craig, if he wasn't available, the fan reaction would then be like, well, where's Craig? Where's Joey? Like, why did you bring Angie back if we weren't going to see them? Right? So I think it was inevitable that either way, in casting Alexa, there was going to be some type of fan reaction out of it. But I actually love it. I love that she plays two characters. I think this is such a cute little Easter egg for fans to realize. The average viewer watches Degrassi when they're actually in high school. So when they graduate in real life, they tend to stop keeping up with the show or any new characters. And the average person watching Degrassi isn't thinking, hey, that Tori girl looks so familiar. Isn't she that, like, 5-year-old from, like, 10 years ago? And for us, being huge Degrassi fans, we love the entire show. So it's really cool when we get to see these kind of little behind-the-scenes secrets play out. And I appreciate this very much. This is the stuff that I think is just so cool about Degrassi. Like, Spike was there for both abortion episodes. Alexa Steele played two different characters. This stuff is my jam. But Alexa actually wasn't the only character who appeared on Degrassi in more than one role. Before Degrassi became this worldwide franchise with a 100,000 square foot studio, it started in 1979 with the Kids of Degrassi Street, and it was just kind of this, like, pick up as you go, grassroots kind of production. And the creator, Linda Schuyler, was driving a van to pick up young actors. She'd make them sandwiches for lunch and just jump into a scene anytime it was needed. The show's musical composer, Lewis, played a store clerk, a customer, a friend. His wife played a teacher. So those moments parents don't officially count as one actor playing multiple characters because it was mostly just like, hey, we need someone. Go see what the writer John Bertram is doing and see if we can get him in a scene, right? And I want to dive into the moments where one actor played two separate characters with two separate names and two separate story arcs. And you might remember Degrassi's mean old history teacher, Mr. Perino. He taught at Degrassi from season 2 of The Next Generation all the way to the end of Next Class, which is 17 seasons. That is impressive. And what's so interesting is he actually also played another character in Degrassi Junior High. If you remember LD, she had an episode where she was too scared to visit her dad in the hospital because her mom got sick and died when she was younger. And it was now just her and her dad owned an auto body shop. Well, while her dad was sick, he had an assistant mechanic named Jeff who stepped in to take care of the shop, and he was there for LD if she needed anything. And that mechanic Jeff was the same actor who plays Mr. Perino almost 2 decades later. Isn't that just like, that's just like the definition of Neato Burrito. That's the kind of stuff I love. I gotta say it. And I really liked, there was one time in an interview, he was talking about how he met Linda and the production team, and that one connection kind of just kept getting him different roles. But when it came to playing a teacher on Degrassi, he said, it was fun. I would come in and go, okay, kids, today's history lesson is the French Revolution. Then they'd pan away to whatever kid was having their crisis. I thought that quote was so funny. He went on to say, he was like, one girl started lactating, another girl brought in a pig. I was obsessed with that. I think that's so funny. And I want to share with you guys, how do I learn all these facts? Honestly, I just keep watching the episodes over and over and over again. I pay attention to the background, to the credits as they roll by. But this very next fact I want to tell you about, I had to have someone fully break it down for me because even after years of being a fan and watching Degrassi, I just had no idea. Degrassi came back in 2001 with a reboot called The Next Generation. And I just thought, wow, what a relevant and succinct title, like really gets the point across. Well, what I didn't know is that Stephen Stone, who's Linda's husband and the executive producer on the show, he's a huge Star Trek fan. And the show Star Trek The Next Generation inspired the title Degrassi The Next Generation. And now that I see it, I'm like, oh, duh. But I truly had no idea. And one of our favorite characters, J.T. York, is actually named after Captain James Tiberius Kirk of the Star Trek strip. Of the Enterprise. One of the characters on the show even says, James Tiberius, the easiest name to remember. And I thought, oh, haha, that's funny because I would absolutely not remember that name. And yeah, it just turned out that it was a Star Trek reference that I didn't get. But it is very, very cool because like if I ever made a TV show or wrote a book or anything, there would be so many Degrassi references in it. So I love that Steven did this with Star Trek and his love for that show. And even more true to real life, JT got his last name from one of the writers, Brendan York. And I just got to know, how do we get a character named Jocelyn? Some other fun facts about character names is sometimes, honestly, they're just puns. Fiona Coyne and Declan Coyne just happen to be the richest characters on the show. That is funny. And Spinner gets his nickname because he has ADHD. And if he forgets to take his medication, he spins out of control. That's good. That's fun stuff. And that's all the stuff that Degrassi fans are like, oh yeah, this is cool. We vibe with this. That's funny. But the next thing I want to tell you about is something that some fans do not agree with, including me. Kevin Smith is a huge Degrassi fan who's also a real-life director. He's made films like Mallrats, Clerks, and is part of the comedy duo Jay and Silent Bob. And both of them appear in season 4, season 5, and the Degrassi Goes Hollywood movie. And in the show, Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes play kind of fictional versions of themselves, and they come to Degrassi to make a movie called Jay and Silent Bob Go Canadian A. And this is like, it's like a super meta movie within a movie type thing. And also, like, quick fun fact, Alanis Morissette actually plays the principal in this movie within a movie. And I just thought that was cool. But anyway, before Kevin Smith became a film director, he worked at a convenience store in New Jersey, which inspired his movie Clerks. But he'd sit and watch episodes of Degrassi Junior High and Degrassi High on PBS every single day. And when he started making his own movies, he actually reached out to Stacey Mistyson, who played Caitlin Ryan in Degrassi. She's the one who says, "You were effing Tessa Campanelli." And he had a huge crush on Caitlin, and he wanted Stacey in his movie Mallrats. And side note, something that is really cool, Stacey recently had an auction where she was fundraising money for a charity, and she put up things that she kept over the years from being on Degrassi. And one was this folder full of newspaper clippings and magazine articles that she kept about Degrassi, and even interviews that mentioned Kevin Smith joining the show. And one of those things is the letter that Kevin Smith wrote asking her to be in Mallrats. And of course, when I saw this, I had to get my hands on it. So now all of those articles and that letter are part of my collection. Isn't that so cool? But what's even cooler is it's just like this like screenshot in a moment of time in Degrassi's history, which I love. But in the end, Kevin wasn't able to get Stacey in his movie, but that didn't slow him down at all from including Degrassi references in his films. He famously wrote his female characters with the idea of Caitlin Ryan. Shannon Doherty wears a Degrassi Jr. high jacket in the movie Mallrats. In Chasing Amy, a character watches Degrassi and says, "I just have a weird thing for girls who say a boot." So Kevin was a longtime Degrassi fan, and when The Next Generation was airing, he reached out and asked if he could be a part of the show. And in these articles that I have, it details a lot about what his role could be because he's an American and the show receives part of its funding for being an entirely Canadian production. So that was super interesting. Even though he was a film director himself, he couldn't fully come in as a sole director and take over the episode. And of course, one of Kevin's real life dreams was to kiss Caitlin Ryan. And because of his character coming in, having these feelings for Caitlin, that on again, off again relationship she had with Joey since the 80s, it was now officially off again, and they broke up for good this time. So some Degrassi fans were obviously upset about this. It was like Kevin Smith came in, everything was about him, and the audience felt like they were kind of gypped for this decades-long romance that is a staple part of the show to just end like that. And while I can agree, if you gave me a free run of Degrassi for a day, the very next episode is going to be me getting married to Fiona. Like, I don't care. It's just going to be what it is. I'm sorry, Fimogen fans, but Fiona's going to have a monologue like, "Jocelyn, you are perfect. You are funny, and I'm in love with you." Like, I can't blame him because I would do the exact same thing. Are you joking? However, I do think some of the contention that Degrassi fans have with these episodes, where Kevin Smith and Jason Mewes are playing kind of versions of themselves, is because some moments in these episodes don't seem to reflect Degrassi's values, and that is where my issues come in. A running joke is that Jason Mewes is sexually attracted to all the high school girls that are around him, which is weird. And there's this scene where Jason pets Ellie on the head and like touches her shoulders, which she doesn't like. It's weird that that was a punchline on Degrassi. I just didn't like it. And Jason, like the character version of Jason, of course, he makes jokes about Kevin wanting to make R-rated movies with Caitlin. There's an anal joke about Paige's character in the movie. It's just kind of very strange for Degrassi, you know? Like, they even break some of their core values during this time in the show because it's supposed to be from the teen perspective. And there's countless times where two adults are having conversations that don't involve the teenagers. If Degrassi's from the teen perspective, telling teen stories for teenagers, who are these specific episodes for? You could argue that Kevin's lumped in with Caitlin, Joey, Spike, and Snake and getting a free pass, but it kind of almost felt like these episodes were just for Kevin Smith. It just doesn't pass the Degrassi vibe check, in my opinion. And maybe I'm getting lost in thinking about a moment on TV in 2005 from a modern 2020 perspective. But regardless, it is a really cool story of a Degrassi fan who fell in love with the show and wanted to celebrate it through his own artwork. And I think that part of the story will always be really touching and moving, especially as a Degrassi fan myself. I totally get why Kevin Smith would fall in love with Degrassi and how much it must have meant to him to be part of something that truly impacted his life. I mean, I was an extra on Degrassi once. I totally get it. Moving on from Kevin Smith, there is a moment in Degrassi Junior High when an actor experienced a tragedy in his real life and wanted to share that story on the show. Neil Hope played Wheels on the original Degrassi series, and Wheels lost both of his parents in a car accident due to a drunk driver. And in real life, Neil also lost his father. Degrassi knew they wanted to tackle the subject of death and teenagers, but head writer Yann Moore said, "We were reluctant to do it. How do you even do it?" The idea for Neil Hope to do the story seemed obvious, but the Degrassi team was worried. Is this a good idea? Is it fair? Is he ready? But Neil was really enthusiastic about it. He had the same experience and he wanted to tell this story. Quickly, the writers came up with a script where Wheels lost both of his parents, and Neil worked closely with the writers on how he felt and what he thinks Wheels will be going through. Neil said, "At first I was scared. I was worried I was going to start thinking about my father again. But in a weird way, it helped." Now, of course, I do have to mention in the years since, Neil Hope has passed away himself. He started on the Kids of Degrassi Street in 1985 as Griff and played Wheels all throughout the classic series and even came back for a cameo appearance in The Next Generation. Neil played a character that was loved by many, and I think Neil being so open and vulnerable made him a character and a person that was easy for fans to love. And this behind-the-scenes fact just goes to show you how dedicated he was to Degrassi. Now, the next story I want to tell you isn't 100% confirmed as the truth. I'm going to tell you a story, and then I'm going to let you draw your own conclusion that I'm right. And this has been driving me nuts because I tried to find a source because I'm like, okay, well, how do I know this? But I just know it. I just do, and I can't prove it. Telling stories about interracial couples, abortions, and gay kids means Degrassi's no stranger to pushback, death threats, and protests against the show. A Christian fundamentalist group called the Florida Family Association spent years boycotting Degrassi. They rallied their troops and sent out thousands of emails to anyone who even ran an advertisement during Degrassi. Even one woman who just wrote a book and bought advertising space on Teen Nick, she was slammed with emails calling her depraved and lacking integrity. And the Florida Family Association, or the FFA, loved to target episodes about homosexuality and teen pregnancy, but they really amped it up in season 10 when the first trans character, Adam Torres, was introduced on the show. And according to the FFA, there was just no way that one single school could have a gay first-string quarterback and a transgender student in the same hallways. It just didn't make sense to them. Which, like, it's funny because you could really make an argument that Degrassi's an unsafe school. Like, there's school shootings and lockdowns and stabbings, and this guy's like, boys are kissing each other? Shut it down. There was even one time when Kodak, they just finished their advertising and the FFA came in and claimed victory over Kodak pulling their advertising from the depraved Degrassi series. But Kodak even released a statement saying, like, no, we didn't do that. This is just how advertising works. And Stephen Stone even commented and said, this is what he does. Sponsors come and go. If someone suspends advertising for a while, he just comes in and takes credit. Adding that the Florida boycott won't stop us, it just proves we're doing the right thing. So far, this is all the truth. This is all a fact that you can research. A Christian fundamentalist group called the Florida Family Association targeted Degrassi for their gay and trans characters. But then in the show, Degrassi introduces the Baker family, a Christian family from Florida. Now, I can't find anything that says the Baker family is 100% a direct response to the anti-gay Florida Family Association, but like, they definitely are. Becky Baker immediately starts protesting the school play, which is Romeo and Juliet reimagined as Romeo and Jules, between two male characters. She says it's not normal, and she even tries to convince one of the actors to undergo conversion therapy. And who does Becky immediately have a crush on? The aforementioned trans character, Adam Torres. And Degrassi explores Becky's confusions of having feelings for this boy, Adam, because her religion says he's actually a girl, and her crush on Adam would make her a gay lesbian sinner that's destined for hell. But no, I think Degrassi does actually do really well at being respectful that Becky is a Christian character, and her faith is important to her, just like many high schoolers who have their own religious beliefs. But they do challenge the ideology in Becky's beliefs around just letting gay and trans people live their lives and what those discussions really look like between teenagers in high school. Becky doesn't waver on her belief in God, but she opens her eyes to the prejudice ingrained in her beliefs, the same beliefs that are held by the Florida Family Association. Coincidence? I don't think so. But honestly, there's even more real-life moments that inspired characters and stories on Degrassi. But what about the opposite? What about when Degrassi inspires real life? Aubrey Graham, who you probably know better as Drake, was interested in music and rap. So Degrassi made his character, Jimmy Brooks, interested in music and rap. And this happens all the time. After a while, the writers would take real interests or real personality traits from the cast and incorporate them into their characters. And that means the show would then extend beyond itself and influence real life. For example, the actor who plays Jimmy is now a rapper in real life. He's now Drake. And Drake was even mentioned in the Degrassi Goes Hollywood movie. Now, don't ask me how it makes sense. We're just going to accept that it's a cool Easter egg. As well, in the show, characters Paige, Ellie, and Marco become roommates when they go off to college. And because of their friendship and their close connection on the show, the actors became roommates in real life. And this isn't the only time Degrassi stars shared a condo in Toronto. The actors who played Hunter and Jonah were roommates. My bestie Annie Clark famously lived with some of her Degrassi co-stars. So real friendships would often come out of people playing friends on the show. But I think my favorite moment on Degrassi that inspired real life was Marco coming out of the closet. Adamo Ruggiero played Marco Del Rossi, and when he auditioned, he had no idea who would be telling a story that was true to his own life. When Marco was coming out of the closet on screen, Adamo was starting to realize some things about himself in real life. Adamo said, "I feel like at times I was one step ahead of Marco, and other times Marco was one step ahead of me. I love this story. Degrassi helped me come out of the closet too. It offered me that same support that Adama was feeling from the show as well. And I think this story is just so sweet and so wholesome because I talk about how Fiona was my favorite queer character on TV because I could see myself in her and there was just no other characters on TV like her. And when Adama was asked about his favorite gay icons growing up, he replied, "I don't mean to sound self-indulgent, but it really was Marco because I didn't know any other gay people." Oh, that could just make me cry. Lauren Collins played Paige on the show, who was Marco's BFF, and she was also his friend in real life. And she said, "I still remember the day Marco came out to Paige, and I'll never forget the day Adamo came out to me." Oh, that is so cute. And someday, guys, in the future of the Degrassi Kid podcast, I really want to break down the queer history that is behind Degrassi with stories just like this. Because when Linda Schuyler talks about Marco, she often reflects on her own best friend, Bruce Mackey. Bruce Mackey was a librarian that worked with Linda in the 70s when she was a school teacher. He would order in books on filmmaking, and one of those books went on to become the inspiration for what is now the first episode of The Kids of Degrassi Street. And even, like, why Degrassi Street? Well, because Bruce lived there. He offered up his home on 98 Degrassi Street for Linda and Kit to film their show. And Bruce was a gay man who struggled with merging his life of a public educator who was active in the community with his private life of being gay. And I think it really needs to be celebrated that Degrassi is built on a foundation of this queer history. Bruce, unfortunately, also passed away several years ago, but Linda speaks so highly of him and celebrates his authentic self with her full heart. And you can see the values of her friendship with Bruce reflected in the show, of just accepting people for who they are, no matter what the world says you can or cannot be. And because Degrassi helped me accept who I truly am, knowing Bruce's connection to the show and how he just wanted to help people, it really makes me feel that much more proud to be a Degrassi fan. So one of these days, I'm going to sit down and tell you how Degrassi got its start, because it really is a beautiful story. But for now, those are the moments in Degrassi that were inspired by real life. I have to send a big thank you to my Patreon supporters. Guys, like I said, I love doing this podcast. It makes it that much easier to bring it to life. And there's three tiers on my Patreon page. The Dot Cafe's $3 subscription that gets you a shout out in the podcast, access to exclusive Patreon content like asking Annie Clark your own questions, and even more importantly, the amazing feeling of knowing you're helping my dreams come true. And we can thank Renee Brushett, Tanisha Maney, Alexandria Elizabeth, and DP2099 for subscribing at this tier. The Spirit Squad is a $5 subscription that gets you all of that, plus early access to the episodes and a chance for us to connect on social media. And we can thank Wilson Gonzalez, Shay Trimmer, Molly Dinan, and Liza Kavanaugh. And the top tier is only $8 a month, where you can get all of that, plus access to bonus content when I have guests like Annie Clark, and the ability to even be a guest yourself. And for this tier, we can thank Sarah J, Max, Evie's Treasures, Ashley Atchley, Annie Clark, Teal Joyce, and my most handsome subscriber, Stevie Jarawa. And a shout out to Corey Thomas, who was like, "Patreon ain't for me, girl, but here you go." And of course, thank you. If you got this far in the podcast, you just truly love me, and I can't thank you enough for that. Nothing beats the gift of validation. Now please excuse me while I go lose my mind that the next time you hear from me, I'll be joined by Annie Clark. Bye, guys.